Thank you. We're now recording.
Thanks so much. We're going to make a start. We've already got quite a good group here. Besides myself, Philip Shepherd, we have Yaolvi Atahun, we have John Bing, Pat Kane, Steve Del Bianco, Palmer Hamilton, Susan Calgucci, Walt Benatris, John Nevitt, Steve Michelle, Milton Muller, Susan Sen, Karen Moller, Steve Metallitz, and Liz Gasser. Operator, anyone else joins, could you join them in silence, please, and we'll call their names in the notes as we go on.
Philip David Ferris is joined.
David, hello. Very welcome.
And Adam
And
hi, Maria as well on the line.
Hi, Maria, hello. You must be having a shared line somewhere, then. I don't see your name appearing. We also have Liz on the line, Liz Gaster, who will be taking over the staffing responsibility for the completion of our report. Liz, can you just say a couple of words about yourself, to introduce yourself to the group?
Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Liz Gaster, and I'm pleased to be joining you as an independent consultant. I'm an attorney in the Washington, D.C. area and have worked on Internet and online issues for many years, for quite some time previously with AT&T and then most recently with the Cybersecurity Industry Alliance, and I'm very pleased to be working with all of you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And Maria, will this be your last call?
It will indeed, I'm afraid. So, yes, hello and goodbye to everyone. Thank you very
well,
much.
Well, indeed. Well, Maria, on behalf of all the group, thank you so much for all your help so far. I think it's been excellent and dedicated as usual. And we wish you all success in your new role in ICANN.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So, without further ado, let's make a start and hope we can just whiz through the rest of this report on today's call before I issue then a revised version, which is already extended by many pages based on our discussions last week and also points made on list. Indeed, if you have already made points about Section 4 going onwards on list over the last week or so, there's no need to repeat that. Those have been captured and will be reflected in the next version of the report. So we'll kick off, if we can, with Section 4, Compliance and Enforcement, to ask if anybody has any specifics they want to mention there not already said. I've already got a number of alternative views, I think, that will be recorded on that based on list discussion. And a couple of clarifications in the introductory paragraph to make it clear that we're only talking about here where there is uniquely a failure of the OLPOC to perform in the way described. Who would like to say something on Section 4?
So, this is Dan, just a point of order.
Dan, yeah?
I'm just wondering if, given the fact that there have been some comments made on list, would it be useful to just briefly enumerate them to get some sense of general response to them in terms of agreement or disagreement?
I can do so. Let me look at my notes on that. So the views being expressed so far is that one of those some members feeling active website suspension were out of scope. Another view that actions related to website suspension to be the only ones in scope. One registrar member feeling that all services should be chargeable. A general disagreement with the recommendation under Section 4 from one registrar and also from one registry member. And a comment from an LEA member looking for a means to regulate or sanction OLPOCs who consistently failed to perform. So, other comments on Section 4?
This is Milton. I'd like to...
Milton, who else wants to be in a queue?
Steve Metallitz.
Steve, who else? Okay, that'll be a moment to Milton.
Yes, on line 359, I think we need to get rid of the word and remedy, the words or remedy, I'm sorry. Based on what we say in lines 337 to 346, basically the OPOC is going to be doing remedy only when the registrant wants them to do, and this section 4 seems to talk about remedy as if it's something that anybody can request. So I think we're talking mainly about review.
Yeah, you're probably right. Actually, we basically defined remedy, or the wording will be clarified in the next version to say that it's either something they're doing on behalf, basically something that they're doing once authorized by the registrant to do it, if it would take place at all. So that probably makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that. Steve.
Yeah, my comment was actually similar, just to break out the reveal by the registrar as a reaction to the failure to fulfill relay or reveal, but the remedy should be treated separately. In other words, just bifurcating this, so that the first bullet would apply. You would take out remedy, and then the first bullet would apply, and then the other bullets, if they apply at all, only apply in the case of remedy, failure to remedy.
I understand the point. I'm just trying to work out if that's the group has said, so that there would never be a case where you've had a failure to reveal, and all you would want at that point is to go to the registrar to reveal instead.
Right.
I thought there had been discussion on the group in terms of things like phishing sites and others, where there was an assumption that could be the failure to react at all was just affirmation of the suspected bad faith, and that at that point the requester wanted to go to the registrar to have the site removed to prevent further harm.
I thought that would be coextensive with the circumstances in which the OPOC should apply the remedy, but maybe I'm mistaken about that.
No, because the OPOC is only really applying a remedy on agreement from the registrar. The only remedy now that we're saying the OPOC would do is really imagining the case where either it's a good faith change and everybody's happy with the change, or there is consent also, and we talked about these large websites where there may be an action to remove specific pages, which is potentially going outside of our remit anyway.
Okay,
but I think perhaps the point is the separation would still be helpful, I think, in terms of the
that's right, because the way it reads now, it almost sounds as if, this takedown and suspension of the website DNS might be a reaction to the failure of the OPOC to relay or reveal by itself. And I would think ordinarily that would not be the case, but...
So, this is Dan, just a quick comment.
So, Dan, anyone else want to speak? Okay, Dan, I forget.
Part of what may be confusing here is that we're kind of talking about two different actors producing various kinds of remedies, either the OPOC or the registrar, and that the section seems to be about remedies by the registrar if the OPOC fails to fulfill duties.
Yes, that's the purpose of Section 4, absolutely, yeah.
And so we need to distinguish between the OPOC remedy and the registrar remedy, in a sense.
Uh-huh. Okay. Other comments on Section 4? No, very good. Let's move on to Section 5, which is basically the output from Working Group C. We had a session on this back in one of our physical meetings. Are there any specific comments on that? I note that Val had made some comments online, which I think was quite helpful clarification, and that will be included in in that revision, but is there anything else that anybody wants to say about that Section 5? No? Standard. Then we move on to Section 6, access to undisplayed data records. There's been a fair amount of comment on list there. I think not many changes at the moment to page 1, which is that descriptive section. Although what I've tried to capture now under section 6.1, 2, 3, and 4 is to say, well, 6.1 stays, I think, the same at the moment, but I've got a little description just before 6.2 explaining that what comes under 6.2, 3, and 4 are just basically descriptions of the type of access and shouldn't be taken as recommendations. I've changed the language slightly there just to explain, to make it descriptive of the type of thing there as opposed to the way it currently looks, which seems to be a bit of a mix between a description and a recommendation. But bearing in mind that change and those already made on list, who would like to speak on Section 6?
Adam Scoville.
Adam, who else?
Milton.
Milton, who else? Okay, Adam, off you go.
Just a quick point of clarification, actually, in 6.1, where it says web-based or bulk, does that refer to bulk access or does that refer to port 43 access?
It's a very good question. I think that was also raised on a couple of discussions on list, and my revision of that currently has removed everything inside those brackets. So it just reads, this access should continue in its present form.
All right, very good.
So, yeah, that makes life easier. Milton.
I just wanted to reiterate the points I made, I think, on the list, which is that my understanding was that the agreement was that that private actors would never have 6.4 kind of access under the OPOC OPOC regime. And even 6.3 access was, pretty much evenly divided, so there was no agreement on that. And there was really only agreement that law enforcement should have, at the very least, what you're calling 6.2, one-time access, that is undisplayed, but that there was support for the idea that they should have 6.3 types of access. And I don't see those agreements reflected in the report. I see much more sweeping. I guess the biggest problem is the merging of private actors and law enforcement actors in lines 490 through 495.
Right. So you're reflecting indeed what was the outcome of the subgroup that you had chaired. Part of the problem I had in trying to phrase this now in context for the rest of the report was where we came to later in terms of the discussions on authentication, which seemed to be that authentication was desirable, but alas, authentication seemed to be so far, according to our knowledge, impractical, which sort of leads you back to, if you're not authenticating anybody, how do you distinguish between those who you're granting access to, except based on self-declaration? And that sort of fed perhaps into that more generalized phrasing there. So perhaps some discussion around that might be useful to hear. Are there other thoughts on that?
This is Dan.
On the report that I read about certifying law enforcement agencies, I didn't really, when he got down to the factual matter in that report, I didn't see any practicality. In fact, it described in detail access to driver's license databases. I think it's clear that thousands of local law enforcement agencies are being certified in some way. I can't just go ask to access driver's license agencies as a private individual. So there must be some system in place.
Yeah, and Milton, you're fading in and out of audibility.
No, I was just saying that I did not interpret the report to say that gatekeeping for law enforcement was impractical. I mean, in fact, it provided an existence proof of such gatekeeping with the driver's license databases.
It did. I mean, it gave examples. I mean, rather than try to cherry-pick the report, all I had captured in our report, really, and that report will be annexed to the final work or referenced in some way, was the consultant's own conclusion, his own summary, rather than trying to put any other gloss on that. I thought that was the most useful thing to capture. But certainly, and I think as we talked last week, we had the idea of opening up a further section, which would be section 8 about feasibility studies, and this will be where issues have come up that are unresolved because of technical or legal uncertainty. And certainly my intent is to include precisely this question of looking at the feasibility of the sort of authentication mechanisms that we're talking about there as recommended further work. So I think that would be useful to see, and particularly to something that has a wider global scope rather than that quick snapshot that we had.
Yeah, I don't want to monopolize the discussion here, but it seems to me that we're still working at the policy level, and the policy agreement was that it would be good. You know, those of us who are concerned about shielding the data will accept certified law enforcement agencies having more access than any private actor that comes along. And as a policy level agreement, I think this group can say that there's agreement on that, but we can't say that there's agreement that private actors should have this broad level of access. Indeed, it undermines the whole point of having the OPOC.
Okay, Doug. And is everybody happy if we make that change? That would be that private actors, that NEAs would be granted potentially 6.4, but private actors would be excluded under all recommendations to be excluded under all circumstances 6.4 bulk access. Does anyone have any problem with that change?
Adam Scoville.
Adam, anyone else?
Monica.
Okay, anyone else?
Christina Rosette.
Christina, anyone else?
Steve Del Bianco.
Steve, anyone else? Okay, Adam.
Just to state that yeah, I think I do have a problem with that. I think that the current report, I think probably quite diplomatically to some degree, avoids coming down to a specific conclusion on this point, and I think it's probably best for the sake of not spending the entire rest of our time as a group that we do continue to avoid such a conclusion here, because I think that we would not, as you heard from the list of people on the queue, that there are quite a lot of people who would disagree with that assessment.
Okay, Mike Warnicki.
Yeah, I concur. No additional comment.
Okay, I agree with that. Christina.
Same.
And Steve Del Bianco.
Philip, I wanted to comment on Milton's observation with respect to the certification of law enforcement, since you said that you may use some of that phrasing in areas for further study. Milton correctly observed that the driver's license access system might exclude him as a private actor. But that is not what the government seemed to be concerned about when we met in San Juan. They seem to say that many law enforcement and consumer protection agencies don't think they would be adequately served by a certification system. So we can't address the certification system on whether it excludes and stops Milton or I from getting access to driver's license. Instead, we have to look at, does it give access to the right amount of law enforcement agencies around the world and government agencies? So it's not just who it excludes, but does it adequately include? Thanks.
Okay. Thanks very much for that.
Phyllis, one comment.
Yep.
Adam said that he thought that the current line 490 through 495 was diplomatically worded. I don't think it is. I think it says both LEAs and private askers must have access described above 62, 63, 64. Now, all I'm asking is that you separate the levels of access for LEAs and private actors as a matter of policy, and we did agree on that in subgroup B. So, you know, I think the statement is now is simply have to be changed. There's support for the idea that LEA should have 6.4. There may be some support for the idea that private actors should have 6.3, but there is definitely no agreement. We just can't say that.
Okay. Well, no, I think that's fine.
So if I could maybe clarify there.
By means?
This is Adam. I don't mean to. I think that Milton has a point that may be too strong to say there's agreements that both must have all those different kinds of access. But I just think it would be. I don't think that there's in any way sort of agreement that private actors should not have those any particular of those types of access. That it's fine to separate out law enforcement and private actors, but to the extent we separate them out, that I think that's probably the most accurate and the way we avoid the most debate and allow us to wrap up our work would be simply to kind of reserve judgment as to whether private actors should have any particular of those kinds of access and simply not make a conclusion as to private actors on those points.
Sure. Okay. No, I think the voices on the group are clear to me, and I will attempt to make that change in that paragraph by splitting that out and characterizing that debate as we've just had it. Other points on Section 6?
Well, this is Dan.
Dan, anyone else? Are you okay, Dan?
I would concur with Milton about the feasibility of certification. I don't think that's been disproven by any means.
Right. Dan, how do you square that with a statement at the beginning of that report, which says, I am not confident that there is an organization that can properly accredit law enforcement agencies in the United States, let alone internationally?
Well, first of all, I think it
I mean, that was a
it contradicts, you know, one of the actual examples in the report. HTCC is willing to accredit law enforcement agencies.
But
it doesn't prove that it can't be done either.
Absolutely, and I think our current phrasing says...
So I think it's going to be ruled out.
No, I think we aren't ruling it out. What we're saying is that I think it would seem to be desirable, but at the moment practicality eludes us.
Well, I don't know that practicality eludes us. I think its practicality is undetermined.
Okay. Well, if practicality doesn't elude us, then you can probably write something to the list and tell us what practicality is that will be globally scalable, Dan.
I'm saying that it's undetermined. I don't think.
Okay. Well,
but it's not determined that it's impractical. That's what I'm saying.
Excuse me. This is Suzanne Shen. Could I just chime in briefly?
You certainly may, Suzanne.
Thank you. Just to clarify, we in the U.S. government have given this quite a bit of thought in consultation with both civil and criminal law enforcement agencies, and from our perspective, to date, we have not been presented with a proposal or considered a proposal that seems practical and implementable.
Yes.
Thank you
again
for that clarification. Milton, anybody else want to talk on this? Milton, off you go.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with Suzanne that there is not a proposal on the table that is practical and enforceable, simply because there is no proposal on the table that's been seriously developed. Again, I think we are talking about policy principles, and we're not talking about implementation. And you say that because you don't have a full-fledged proposal on the table that everybody likes and accepts, that it's impossible is simply not a logically justifiable conclusion.
Oh, well, excuse me. I wasn't very clear, Philip, if I could chime in again.
Okay, Suzanne.
It's not the absence of a proposal per se. We have given thought to the concept. And I would just remind you all that whatever you would propose for a national system, or as Philip puts it quite well, a globally scalable system, you have to have the acceptance and the commitment by law enforcement agencies themselves. And that does not exist.
Well, we know that. We know that they don't want to give up any access to WHOIS data. But
we're talking about certification here.
Whether law enforcement wants change with the question of whether it's practical to
do. No. Excuse me, Milton. We are not talking about the larger philosophical question here. This is a very practical question. From a practical implementation perspective, it will be very, very difficult to arrive at consensus among law enforcement agencies around the world as to how best to do this. That's all I'm trying to say. Thank you.
Okay. I mean, for me, in the way that we've written the report so far, I mean, there is generally the assumption where we've made a policy recommendation and then that's listed some implementation options. There was an assumption that implementation is practical, and we haven't heard, you know, voices against saying no, it's impossible. That there is a working feeling that can be done, it's just detail we don't need to go into. And I think I characterize this particular issue a bit differently for the reasons we've heard, but I will attempt to capture this discussion in the next version.
Yeah, I think we need to move on. But again, existence is always a more powerful argument than a consultant's opinion, and there is a database that does restrict access to 10,000 of local law enforcement agencies in the U.S. I'm sorry, that's just a fact.
Okay. Anything else on Section 6 before we move on to 7?
Yes, this is Dan, a different point.
Yep.
I just wanted to say that from my point of view, self-declaration would be unacceptable for non-law enforcement agencies. I just don't think that's effective in terms of providing any kind of control on the use of the data. That's effective.
This is David Ferris. Can I just respond to that?
Yep, by all means.
I think I might have mentioned this before on the call, but there are examples where self-declaration by private parties is deemed acceptable, not just by private actors, but also by governments. And I would just note the EU-US safe harbor in that regard.
Okay.
But do those contexts compare to this context in any way?
What was that, Dan?
It seems to me that deciding whether it's acceptable or not is context dependent. So I don't know what context you're talking about as compared to this context.
It's in the context of transfer of personally identifiable information from the EU to the U.S. So if the largest concern is privacy laws, it's directly applicable. To those who have concerns regarding privacy, it's directly applicable in that regard.
Okay,
so
if you remember, this is not unrestricted access to the data. It's all based on a presumption of reasonable suspicion or whatever the.
Yeah, but it only means anything if there's a challenge procedure that has any teeth to it. So.
Yes.
Without understanding what the challenge procedure
recorded,
is, I couldn't agree to it.
And haven't we recorded the Shubert challenge procedure?
Yeah, but what kind of challenge procedure? What are the costs involved? What are the barriers to entry? What are the burdens?
A good challenge procedure. Okay, all right. An effective challenge procedure. I think all are. We could have effective before every noun in this whole report if we wanted, but I'll certainly put one in there.
This is Ross.
Ralph,
can I get in the queue?
Please do.
Okay, thank you. I've already written on this about the word timely in the report.
Yes.
And I think what I just thought of is that it could be split in two, because you've got timely at the direct digital access, but after that you might want access to data which is there, which is definitely not revealed, and then you get timely in the in a written way. And that's something we make a distinction, a definite distinction about as Opta, because if you want digital access, we would like to have it just straight away and direct. But if you want other forms of information, then you would do it in writing and official. And, of course, then you give a time date of 1 or 2 weeks to respond in writing.
Right.
So I would like to make that distinction, please.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, your other comments, I think, were useful also. We're just on characterizing that. So I can add that to what we're trying to capture there. That was on 6.2, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay. Are we done with section 6? Very good. Section 7. Now, on to section 7, and perhaps Maria and/or Liz may want to comment on that. What section 7 is intended to have is records of where there had been substantive discussion of sort of issues that we had talked about, but basically didn't get anywhere. They're worth recording, and the only one that I could was what we currently see under 7.1, which is this distinction between commercial and non-commercial, which had a certain amount of support, but I think fell foul of too many problems in implementation for it to garner what we describe as even support on the group to go forward. And so it's captured under 7 because, in particular, it was also alluded to in our terms of reference. Maria or Liz, are there other areas of discussion that you're thinking of including under that at the moment? Not surprised, both of them. Okay, well, while you're thinking about the answer to that, perhaps I can ask anyone on list if their own recollection is that there were some discussions that took place in part of the earlier report that may be in particular worth recording, and we'll ask our staff support to dig out those records and incorporate it there.
Still with Adam Scoville?
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Adam.
Would it be worth, I'm sort of frantically flipping back now to see the references earlier in the report, but would it be worth addressing the issue of accreditation in this context?
Could be, although it's not excluded. I mean, I think the debate around that is going to be, at the moment, is I think I will try to capture sufficiently under 6, and also marking this element for further work.
Not accreditation of the requester under a tiered access system, but accreditation of the OPOC.
Oh, right, yeah, that's a good point. Actually, in fact, we've got it elsewhere in the report, and then we skip over it, don't we? It may be better moving that chunk and expanding it to here. Perhaps.
Yeah, or leaving the kind of conclusion that the group as a whole didn't like it up above, but, you know, just leaving only that conclusion up above and bringing it down here or what have you.
Fleshing out a bit more what we talked about there. Yes, not a bad thought. Thanks for that. Any other thoughts on Maria or Liz? Have you come back online?
Hello. Sorry, it's Maria here. I managed to drop off just at the wrong moment.
Did you hear the question?
I heard it. It was basically about filling in Section 7 on capturing previous discussions.
Yes.
Where was it also talking about the distinction between commercial and non-commercial and also legal and natural?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, those sections are being added. Were there any... That was the commercial and non-commercial was the main one, I thought, but was there what other...
Yes, I mean, that was my opinion too, and did you hear this, what Adam had suggested, which was quite useful, which is the discussion around accreditation of an OPOC, which we had dismissed. So I think what I would do is maybe I'll check on our wording at the beginning of the report and maybe just minimize that, and we can flesh out the argument that was there. And I think you captured that, in fact, in earlier report versions already.
Indeed, we did. I'll work with Liz, and we will get that to the we'll get that to you, so it can be in the next version of the report.
Okay, very handy. Any other suggestions on Section 7?
Yeah, we might want to include this business about exclusion of private actors from certain kinds of access here.
Okie doke. Other suggestions?
So what's the status of including public interest and private interest in the report?
There was some very helpful discussion, I thought, on List, and what I've now done is a revised version of that introductory section, where I think it's in our clarifies better what we're talking about. So I didn't, for me there wasn't a polemic debate over that.
Okay.
I think it was just a question of clarification as to what we were trying to capture there, and in particular that compatibility with the way that laws also look at and recognize exceptions.
All right. Are those words still in the report? Public interest and private interest. Mm-hmm.
I currently got them out. Public interest certainly is, because that's a super word to continue in there. The title is currently the public interest : balancing privacy and harm, demonstrating very clearly that both of those are aspects of the public interest.
All right.
So there's nothing further on 7. That leads us on to, I think, so new section 8 will capture a number of things for future possible work, suggesting short-focused studies. And what I've recorded under that so far is things relating to actual costs, such as implementation of verification and consent proposals, such as compliance issues in Section 4 that we've just discussed, such as access options described in Section 6, and indeed the marginal cost of setting up a new fee-based system compared with recovering costs from a user fee system. So it's just trying to capture some of the real-life things, I think, which should be fairly simple to report on. excuse me. Two other things that came up there would be data privacy issues arising from self-declaration of excesses, proposal described in 6, and indeed the what we discussed, the feasibility of an authentication mechanism for excesses as described in Section 6. Which will probably give staff and our budget enough to be going on with. I think all those areas would be quite useful. And then Annex 1 has not changed. It has a bit, actually, yes. I think Annex 1 in its new version would now be reflecting the difference we discussed in terms of whether or not under a new proposal, OPOC and admin would somehow be merged, whereas tech would continue. And just a sort of illustrative group of what looks like maybe display options. If anybody, perhaps particularly registrars, could cast an eye over that and let us know if there's any obvious error or mischaracterization, that would be very helpful. Annex 2 is a glossary. At the moment we have one term under accuracy, and I think, Maria, you told me before you're working on including a number of other things under Annex 2, was that right?
Yes, I've done so, and in fact I sent a template of that to Glenn, so it includes some extra terms that were requested on the list, and also the glossary that we had before we started this working group.
Excellent. Okay. So any comments then on those last sections, the new Section 8 studies and Annexes 1 and 2?
So this is Walt.
Walt, yep. Anybody else for the queue? Not at the moment, about off you go.
Okay. But I understood from the last week or 2 weeks ago discussion that nobody really knew what the admin thing was about, and I just asked my colleagues who are really researching, and they said that's where the bill gets sent. Yeah, and we actually got very valuable information in the past on two or three cases where that led to the culprit. So that's what I was explained here, and I wanted to share that with you. But maybe I'm wrong, and
yeah,
please let me know what you think.
That may be characterized in the .NL code. I don't think my understanding, and perhaps John, I think he's only registered on the court at the moment, you could help us out there. My understanding is typically you have it's actually outside who is, but typically registrars keep a separate record for the bidding contact. Is that right? And John Levitt is currently offline, I know. So we'll need to check on that. But that's my understanding.
Philip, this is Steve Metalis. Can I ask you?
Yep, Steve, go ahead.
First of all, on that question, you're right that at least some registries actually are required to make billing contact information available through who is.
All right.
But in general, in the in .com, certainly the registrars are not required to do that, and presumably they collect some type of billing information and retain it, and it certainly could be useful to law enforcement and to others, but it's not made publicly available.
Yes, I mean honestly, in a sense, it's almost an issue. Perhaps it is worth recording, of course, because the billing contact is at least guaranteed to, at one point in time, have been a real contact. Because otherwise money won't have flowed and registration won't have happened, whereas in the current situation everything else could be a load of nonsense. So it is actually a point of certainty.
I think that is a very good point, Philip.
Yeah.
Philip, I had said one other question, which is you referred to Section 8.
Yes.
Am I correct that hasn't been circulated?
Correct, yes. I
just want to make sure I wasn't missing.
No. I was just running through what would be any new Section 8. Any other thoughts as to studies? By any means, I mean, wait until you see what's currently there as I listed it, but that would be the opportunity for just specifying in one place items for further work.
This is Steve in the queue, please.
Steve, yeah, anybody else in the queue? Okay, Steve, off you go.
For areas of further study, I feel like this is an opportunity for us to return to the core problem that OPAC was supposed to solve in respect to stopping the harvesting of email addresses that presumably cause incremental amounts of spam. David Maher had commented on the list with regard to the SSAC study that was discussed in Lisbon. But there has to be, at some point, we do a sanity check to see whether the OPAC system we've created, whether the costs of such a system are adequate to the benefits provided at presumably stopping some incremental spam that arouse through harvesting. So I would actually recommend that the area for further study is to take our plan and align it against whatever evidence we have of abuses of WHOIS data and do that balancing of costs and benefits. Thank you.
This is Wout.
Wout, yes.
Just in a reaction to that, I'm not the European Commission. I'm not working for a privacy bureau over here, but for law enforcement. But I think that one of the reasons with that we're doing this also is because in the European Union, this sort of data is not allowed to be revealed. And we are trying to find ways to have it revealed to agencies which are allowed to view them. So that's another part of the discussion of the OPOC, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. Okay, other comments from anybody on those latter sections of the report? No, well, if not, that's splendid. So I will try and have out this week our new version, which will be 1.7. 6 to capture all the discussion we've had over the last 2 weeks on Lyft and on the call. What I welcome in terms of further commentary on that, I think, is it's not sort of so much I agree or disagree with things that are there. I think we've had that, but only to say if you think your viewpoint has not been captured at all, to point that out. In other words, so that the spread of opinions as to what we have in the report is correct, and indeed any last minute clarifications that would still be necessary would be useful. I think we can probably capture most of that online. Maria and Liz, perhaps you can inform us, what would be your own timing in terms of doing all the extra bits that you need to do for turning that report into a ICANN-esque creature?
If I might jump in, it's Maria. We have pretty much all of them except for what's come up on today's call, so I think we should have them turned around by the end of this week.
Okay, so you could probably get those to to me or my changes to you, so we can have it all in the next version this week.
Absolutely. Can I just come back also just when we were talking about Section 7, I thought Milton mentioned something about access to unpublished data, and I didn't quite capture what it was he meant.
It simply is a question of this Section 7 seems to be repository for alternate views. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, where we had substantive discussion about alternative views that did not go forward.
Yeah, right. So I basically am not quite sure. I mean, I think that the view that I basically think that the working group is equally divided on the question of access, and it's not an alternate view as it's now characterized. But if we get unjustly downgraded to that, then I would want essentially what I would conceive of as a minority report in Section 7 objecting to that and explaining the true situation.
Okay, thank you for the unbiased characterization.
Philip, I don't really think I can write a minority report, so what is it that we should be providing?
I'll write it for you.
No, Milton will wait and see how we've captured that in Section 6 first, I think, is what he's saying.
Yes.
And he's reserving his right to come back to us.
Great, thank you both.
So, anything else before we conclude?
Philip, this is Adam. Just the guidance that you gave just a moment ago about sort of guidance on the kinds of responses that you think would be helpful at this stage, it might just be helpful for you to repeat that to the list, because I know that obviously there are people who aren't listening
now.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll have that in the body of the email when we distribute the report attached to it. Yeah, absolutely. Anything else? Okay, Doug. In terms of future calls, I think at the moment we will not schedule future calls to see if we can do it all by list. If it turns out other issues raise themselves for which we think a call would be the right mechanism to sort that out, then indeed we may go for one. But if not, we will attempt to conclude our work with 1.6 and maybe revisions to that and a final 1.7 rapidly thereafter. So thank you all very much for your contributions so far. And I hope that together we can come out with a report that may lead to change. So, thank you, and we'll end the call now.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank
bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Louis? Hello?